How come you can say cool beans, but you can't say other types of beans?
Magic beans.
Hot beans.
Hot beans.
Smooth beans. Kidney beans. True beans.
Butterscotch shenanigans.
Hey everybody, welcome to Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth and I'm the game programmer.
I'm Adam and I'm the web programmer.
I'm Sam and I make pictures.
And before we get started, we have a warning. Anything can happen on this show. There may be lewd, crude, or rude behavior. So if you are sensitive, if you are under the age of 18, if you're under the age of 30, or perhaps even 60, you should go ahead and stop listening now. And
this is for octogenarians only.
Yeah. So get out. Don't come back, you scamp.
Also, Seth, you forgot to mention tood.
Oh yeah, there's gonna be some tood.
Yeah,
that's short for
altitude.
Altitude. Yeah.
Altitude.
All right, so this is a new year. It's a new me. It's a new you. It's a new podcast.
Yeah, we missed last week's episode, which would have been our first episode of the year, but instead this one is.
Well, here's why though.
Because we wanted to start it off on the right foot.
Yeah, I mean our New Year's resolution was not to miss any more podcasts, and as we all know, the first thing you're supposed to do when you make a New Year's resolution is fail hard.
Well, but here's another way to think about it. Had we done that first one but missed this week, then we would have already failed our New Year's resolution. But since we didn't do the first one, we just hadn't started the resolution yet.
That's true.
It was just a delay.
Yeah, we just delayed our resolution to keep our act together. Yeah.
I like the way you think, Adam.
So yeah, we basically nailed it. But as you know, to kind of make up for last week's miss, we're going to go a little bit longer than normal today, probably up to 30 to 40 seconds. That's our gift. That's our gift to you all.
Settle in with some popcorn and a big bucket of water.
Yeah.
Because you're going to need to stay hydrated.
Oh, is that not for bathing purposes? It's for...
No.
Oh, okay.
No, of course not. And so we also wanted to hit a sort of state of the Butterscotch Union at the beginning of this year and go over some of the interesting or perhaps extremely boring statistics about where our studio is. And it might be kind of cool then next year, if we do the same thing for our first podcast of the year, to kind of look back and compare. So,
yeah, totally.
So where are we?
I'll throw out some stats.
Stats us,
I just
Adam.
Scraped them up right before we started this thing. So
gross.
This is our 34th podcast. So that means that we started this podcast last year, basically 9 months ago-ish. And over those 9 months, we casted 33 pods. Across those, we had 11,000 listens, which is pretty good, actually. For a little comedy dev cast pod, whatever.
It's thing. Kind of a niche market.
A little bit of a niche market.
What are you going to do?
And what else? So Butterscotch ID, which we also started basically a year ago now, a few months over a year ago, but really became active a year ago, has 47,000 registered users, which is awesome. And amongst them, we have generated 4,500 pairs of friends.
Aww.
So it's pretty cute.
It's cute.
That's why we do it. That's why we do it, you guys.
It's a significantly smaller number than the number of registered users. I don't know what that's all about, but I guess people don't want friends. I don't know.
We haven't given them enough reasons.
No,
we gotta make some multiplayer games, I guess.
And across all of our games, we have 4.5 million downloads, which is quite cool. So that's
pretty good.
That's pretty fun. What else? Our forums, which are only for our most active users. So again, we have 47,000 Butterscotch IDs. Of those, almost 1,000 of them have actually logged into the forums to hang out there and do stuff. Putting together 7,000 posts.
It's like a 2% conversion.
Yeah, weirdly, every single damn conversion everywhere that we measure is on the order of a few percent. I don't know what the deal is with that. It's like 1% of people who download our games actually log in and doing stuff there. And then 1% of those ish actually log into the forums. It seems like YouTubers work the same way, since we've been getting a lot of requests from YouTubers to play Crashlands. And we're looking at their stats. It's the same deal. They've got like, you know, a 1% rate ratio of subscribers to numbers of views on any particular video. So I don't know.
So if you're listening to this podcast, you're actually a member of, you're a member of the Butterscotch 1%.
Yeah, it's more like 1% of 1% of 1%.
Yeah,
of 1%.
You're in the elite
echelon. So you better, you know, build those walls high around this castle you have, because the pitchforks, they're coming. The mob's coming.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, actually, yeah, it's true. The podcast is something like, what, 0.1% or 0.01%?
It's a very elite faction. It's a very elite faction of listeners. And also, as far as statistics go, we have, just in kind of thinking of the success of our studio so far, we have currently about 2 months worth of money in the bank.
Ooh.
And that is including all three of us being paid somewhere below what would be considered the poverty line.
Which, you know, it'd be a shame if one of us happened to have, you know, extremely expensive medical condition or something.
Yeah, which fortunately, that is not the case.
Yeah, not
fortunately,
at all.
Fortunately, everyone is fine.
Yeah.
It's a good thing that we have very supportive spouses who are
taking
care of us financially while we do this.
And of course, this isn't to say, oh man, way, like it's so hard to make games. I mean, it is, but I just think it'll be an interesting thing to look back on a year from now, either in a sad way or in a good way. I don't know, because maybe we'll have even less money next year. who knows? And at this time, we are 1 week away from launch for our first PC game.
Crashlands!
Which is Crashlands.
No, it's Crashlands!
And for those of you who are, since our listeners of this podcast are the most elite of the elite, then we are going to be announcing the actual launch times right now on this podcast.
Yeah, the official launch date is January 21st, but because of all kinds of shenanigans that have to do with the stores and when they turn over their like top new games pages and blah, 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 the specific times are actually a little different.
Yeah, so we have to do some weird jukey dances, but we're going to be launching on Google Play and iTunes. We're going to be hitting the publish button at 11 p.m. Central Time, January 20th. So it may take up to 2, possibly even 3 hours after we hit that button for the games to go live and be downloadable.
Although in practice, it seemed like it's only been half an hour or so.
Yeah, it's usually 20 minutes or so.
Yeah, it kind of depends. I think it depends on peak times and stuff. At that time of night, it's probably going to be fine. So you can sort of anticipate that by midnight Central Time, January 20th / morning of January 21st, you'll be able to play on mobile. On Steam, we will be launching at 7 o'clock a.m.
Basically, January the moment 20th. We get up, we're going to hit that publish button.
Yeah, January 21st. So that's for PC and Mac. So basically, if you sleep like a normal person and you live in the U.S., then you can basically expect that on the morning of the 21st, it'll all be ready for you.
Yeah, but if you're really anticipating Crashlands and just want to play at the moment it is possible, then
get yourself some Red Bulls and go to town.
Yeah, be ready on your mobile device for that evening.
And if you download it immediately as it becomes available on mobile, by the time you go to work the next morning, you'll be very tired. But also, you will be
super tired.
Maybe, what, 5%, 10% of the way through the game? Something
oh, you're
like
saying
that?
If they just download the game and start playing it and don't sleep at all until the moment, you'll be about 10% of the way through.
Yeah, then you can go over to the water cooler at work and laugh in people's faces and throw water at them. I don't know what happens at the water cooler, honestly, but
I come to think of it, I don't think I've ever been in an environment with a water cooler, except for like in a waiting room.
Mm-hmm. I've been in an aquarium before, though.
That's sort of like a really big water cooler.
Yeah, there were lots of people talking about lots of different things there, but
we just wanted to first talk about where we are now as of the start of the year.
Yeah.
And now Seth's going to go into what our plans and hopes and dreams are.
Yes. For this year. What's going to be happening in 2016?
2016, year of the
dragon.
Is it the year of the dragon?
No, it's monkey.
Oh.
It's the year of the monkey.
That is significantly less awesome.
It's a lot less awesome. So the first thing that we're going to be doing, and we're going to hopefully get this done either right before or sort of around the Crashlands launch, is we're getting our old games updated in a very light sense. So the first thing is they will not require you to pay for a butter up in order to get access to the B-Scotch ID perks. So all the cross game perks, the achievements, the friend statistics and leaderboards and stuff like that. That's all going to be just free in every game. The butter ups will still be required to get the various in-game features like all the unlocks in Flop Rocket, the access to the new ships in Roid Rage, all that stuff.
Yeah, so you still have to buy the game if you want to play all
if you want to get the full content. The full shebang.
Yeah, but you'll be able to access, so I guess it's probably the best example. There are a few in Roid Rage which you have to butter up in to get access to the ships. Mm-hmm. If you do unlock one of the other ships using a perk, then you'll be able to access it just by logging in without having to butter up to get it.
Exactly. So I guess in theory, if you can get to Space and Flop Rocket without buttering up, which would be impressive. Tough.
I think it might actually be impossible.
It's possible because you can still get the fuel, but...
Oh, and the converter. Yeah,
yeah, you won't get the armor or anything like that, so it'll be really tough to make it. But if you can do that, then and if you go over to Roid Rage, you will be able to fly the Flop Rocket or in Roid Rage. So, you know, there is that. We're also updating Roid Rage so that the interns that pilot the ships actually will get some kind of extra capabilities. So as an example, Steve, the intern Steve, will repel asteroids slightly.
Gently, yeah.
And we're also adding Flux as an intern. And that's from Crashlands perk. So if you get a perk in Crashlands, you'll be able to use Flux in Roid Rage. And you'll also be able to use the escape pod. So we're getting all kinds of perks added to those games from Crashlands. So we're going to hopefully get all that stuff done, you know, over the next couple of weeks. And it'll be published and playable.
Yeah. We hope to get it out before Crashlands launches so that people can get in there and start unlocking perks and stuff before the game comes out without having to butter up, since that was kind of the big goal for the fix. But the likelihood of us really pulling that off for all four games is not.
She's low with all the other things.
Yeah, there's too many other things to do.
Things are busy around launch time. So. Yeah,
it is. I mean, it's 10 days until Crash. No, is it less than that? What is today? Tuesday?
Today's Tuesday. At the time people will be listening,
it'll be Wednesday.
It'll be 8 days from launch. Well, technically like a week and 12 hours because we're launching it late at night. So
yeah,
but I do say this has been the most relaxed launch we've had, I think, as far as
well, it was well planned.
Yeah, that's basically what it comes down to. Because before Adam came on, Adam demanded a certain level of intelligence as far as our approach to launch that Seth and I had just been lacking. So we would kind of just throw it against the wall as soon as it was done. Which always meant that there was a lot of problems around launch.
Although, so, well, you guys were also nearly out of money each time you
yes.
launched a game.
Yeah, when we launched Quadrupus, I think we were like 2 weeks away from $0.
This seems to be a trend.
Yeah, so like right now, I mean, we got 2 months, you know, so we're like, we can do whatever we want. We can have a month-long beta test if we want.
Breathing easy with my food stamps over here.
It also takes 2 months for us to get paid from any of the stores.
That's
so
true.
We are actually right up against that disaster.
It's a very surgical operation that we're running here. It's very precise. So once Crashlands comes out, then we are going to... Well, it depends. If Crashlands totally bombs and doesn't really, you know, put us into a different financial position, then fuck it, we got to move.
To Colombia. We're going to Colombia.
We're moving to...
Somewhere where it's cheaper to live.
Probably getting into the drug trade. It's going to be, we hear that it's a little bit less competitive than games. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, probably.
And the customers treat you a little bit better sometimes.
That's actually probably true. Oh my God. We could sell our organs also, but Sam's organs are kind of shitty right now. So I don't
think mine, I'm not going to be viable for any of that. No. So you guys are going to have to do double duty, I guess.
Although, actually, right now, if we were to sell Sam's bone marrow, we could actually, it's two bone marrows. So maybe we'd get like a
two for one bulk discount, something.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe we could bump that price up a bit because it's like double. Wait, does it mean it's double bad or double good? If you have,
I think it might double be double good. Bad. Well, we just need to frame it, you know, that's to right. sell it.
So it's all about
it's double good.
Well, no, Sam had good bone marrow to begin with. There was nothing wrong with it. You know, it just wasn't Kuna's job. So
Yeah.
There was nothing wrong with it except that it was cancer.
Which, you know, whatever.
No, it's a little thing.
It's like a flu. you know. So, yeah, so all this kind of depends on what's going to happen with Crashlands. If Crashlands does do well, then we can turn around and support for a while, which what we want to do is spend a couple months working up a big content patch that will have a whole bunch of fun sort of, I don't know if you'd call them vanity items, but, you know, just some goofy stuff that you can build and put in your base, some extra combat options, weapons, gadgets, stuff like that.
Maybe a new boss, who knows?
Yeah, and we're also going to work up the Crashlands creator stuff, yeah, so that the public can make their own Crashlands campaigns.
Yeah, that's going to be cool, and I think we're all really hoping that the game does well enough to warrant that development and infrastructure investment, because we made the game with the creator, and letting players do the same thing is just, it's going to be so cool to see what people generate, mm-hmm, in this sandbox we've created.
Yeah, I mean, to give you an idea of how potent the creator is, nothing that you see in the game that's story related or anything, none of that is hard coded. It's all done through the creator.
Yeah.
So absolutely every aspect of the story campaign, you could recreate the Crashlands campaign exactly, yep, if you want. I don't know why you would do that, because it's already,
well, you might
want
to do it in your own language or something, since we will not be translating. It's just too big to be translated into other languages.
That's true.
So while the game is available everywhere, it's really, unfortunately right now, it's only going to be fully understandable as a game for people who speak English well enough to also be able to handle the fucking weird words that we use in the game.
And, that's true.
And the, yeah, dialects of the races and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of the items in the game, too, are their names are fusions of two different
English words
yeah, put together. Like, we have, there's an armor set that's all made out of Smash Blossom item, like, parts.
Right.
And it's called, like, the hat is called a smat, the vest.
You got a smock.
The vest is a smock. The gloves are
smittens.
Smittens. And the boots are they smoots?
I think they're smoots.
Smoots.
It certainly sounds reasonable.
I mean, what is that going to come out to in French or something? I don't know.
Yeah, so if you're not a really fluent English speaker, then Crashlands is going to be rough as a story game for the story that we wrote. So, you know, the story and all the gameplay available at launch. But we will, because the creator will let you do all kinds of things, we'll probably, at the same time we launch that patch, we'll likely include a pure sandbox mode just built into the game. So, because otherwise a whole bunch of people will be making sandbox modes, which is just dumb. So we'll just include one in the thing. So that way, if you don't want to deal with story at all, just want to go fight stuff and build things, and you can do that. And otherwise, we're going to put as much language support in as we can so that people can make stories in their own languages and share those with other people.
Yeah.
The problem is we don't know what the fuck we're doing when it comes to language support.
So
that's going to be probably one of the biggest tasks is going to be sorting that. And we'll probably have to change some of the fonts in the game to make it work. And there's going to be some kind of weirdness, probably some backwards compatibility issues, I suspect.
So one of the downsides of growing up in America,
yeah,
where we only learned one language growing up and then have no clue how the rest of the world operates.
Yep.
So, whoops. All right, so then the last thing we want to hit on for plans for the new year is what we're going to do after we're done with Crashlands stuff.
Post-Crashlands.
Which, Sam, do you want to sure, dive into this a little bit?
Yeah, so we kind of came up with a strategy as far as what we want to do with the studio and with the stories we're telling. And you'll notice that all of the games that we've made, we've sort of bound into the same universe at this point. However, that's been very lightly done, because games like Quadrupus and Flop Rocket don't have much of a story, or Roid Rage. And so what we're going to do in the future is actually plan, which is novel.
What?
essentially plan trilogies. So the next two games you'll see out of Butterscotch will be essentially mid-sized games. So games that take us somewhere between 3 and 6 months to complete.
So bigger than Quadrupus.
Yeah, at this point, because of our powers, they'll be probably substantially larger than Quadrupus, but similar in terms of their exploration of a mechanic and a particular aspect of the universe that we built. And the whole idea is that over the course of the two smaller games, we really, you know, get people invested in the world, introduce them to a bunch of the high power characters involved in this major story arc. And then the third one is a larger scale game that's, you know, a 6 to 12 month project that binds all of the stuff that you've done in the previous two games together, and really, while also, you know, being able to stand on its own and really ties all that into the universe in a really big, cool, powerful way.
Yeah, and the current set actually does that. It just wasn't...
It wasn't intentional, and it's a bit weaker than what we'd like to do in the future.
Yeah, but it is the case that when we made the story for Crashlands, we wanted Crashlands to tie the other games together. So we just like pulled all those stories into it.
Mm-hmm. So now we'll do it on purpose with the next three games.
Yeah, I think, and as far as just like tech stretching and stuff, things that we want to be able to accomplish that we currently haven't done yet, branching into multiplayer stuff. And that doesn't necessarily mean real time, but just some sort of social connectivity or anything like that where you can... There's a lot more meaning involved with the Beastcotch ID system. And also with being able to play with your friends would be so good. And then that also includes stuff like we've been kicking around the idea of a Quadrupus 2, which does actually have, you know, co-op in it. So you can run around and beat the crap out of stuff.
Local co-op.
So, you know, these are things that are on the horizon for us, and are whatever happens with Crashlands also kind of determines our ability to, you know, what's going to happen.
On the technology side, it would be really... So we've kind of got the markets figured out for mobile. We're now just getting into the the PC market, and so we're getting a handle on what that looks like and you know how to deal with press when it comes to that and all that kind of stuff. So the next move is going to end up being consoles, because, you know, we want to be able to, through Beastcatch ID, since Beastcatch ID ties everything together, and because all of our games are now, as we move forward, are going to take place in the same universe. Even though there'll be quite different stories and different characters and stuff, it's all supposed to be one coherent universe. And so being able to spread that across as many devices that people can use as possible will be really cool. And so right now we don't have any games with meaningful controller support.
Right.
And it would be, and so in terms of like having Quadrupus, having a two-player local co-op Quadrupus with keyboard support, or sorry, with controller support on PC and on Xbox, for example, would be really awesome. So we want to be able to move on and do that kind of stuff as well.
Something else that's really kind of interesting about this idea of making these trilogies, or, you know, pulling games together into the same universe, is if you look at the now five games that we have as our major titles, they all play very differently.
Yeah.
They feel different. You know, some of them are more arcadey, some of them are more slow and story driven, and I think it doesn't really matter, because when I think of the sort of atmosphere that we want to create for our players, it doesn't really matter what the mechanics are of the game, as long as it's fun and accessible. Because I think what people take home at the end of the day is they take home the feelings and the story and like the laughs that they had and the characters that they met and stuff like that. And all of the different game mechanics kind of fall by the wayside. So as far as the next three games go, mechanically, they might look completely different than anything that we've done before. Like we might make an RTS.
Yeah, hopefully they're quite different.
Yeah.
Because it's fun to explore different things. And that's actually one of the things that's been fun about this universe trying to put together, is because the universe is now coherent and we have the cross game award system that encourages people to try these other games, then, you know, most gamers are not really broad gamers. They don't play first person shooters and RTSs and MOBAs, for example. They tend to just like have one kind of game that they really play, and even actually just play one game.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think it's more like they just play a game.
A specific game.
They'll play Rocket League or Counter-Strike or StarCraft. Right. And that's just what they don't go, you don't hear somebody go, oh yeah, I'm a MOBA player, I play MOBAs.
Yeah.
No, they're just right. Like, yeah, I play League. That's it, you know.
Actually encouraging players to, giving them reasons, external motivation to try stuff that they normally wouldn't do, I think is also really cool. Because we even had, during our beta test, we had at least one person who, when they started beta testing Crashlands, was like, oh, this wasn't what I was expecting at all, because they were expecting a fast, arcadey kind of game. And yeah, there are components of that in Crashlands, but it's mostly a crafting and story game, you know, more than it is an action game. Mm-hmm. And so it's a slower paced thing. And so he's kind of surprised by that, and then actually doesn't like that kind of game, like hates Minecraft, hates Terraria, right? But because of the sort of external push to do it, because he was a beta tester and he's really into our other games, then he gave it a chance. So he put in a few hours, and as he started to understand the mechanics, then he got really into it and ended up being one of the testers that put in more time than almost anybody else. And it was because of the giving it the chance factor that that allowed him to try a new game genre.
Yeah, well, and I think if you think about it, it makes sense. Because why would it be the case that you'd just be like, I hate this type of game. Like,
right.
It's designed to be fun.
There are sort of, you know, I mean, we ripped out a lot of things that we saw as problems in crafting games, right? Things that we actually don't like about crafting games that tend to make us stop playing them when we made Crashlands.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually probably a lot of it. I think there are certain aspects of any game genre that people who aren't really into that genre really don't like.
And they're very identifiable and easy to.
And by trying to identify those things. I mean, our goal with Crashlands is to make it just as accessible and interesting to people as possible. So it has tons of different kinds of components, but we also try to rip out all the stuff that was frustrating about different genres.
Yeah.
And so if we can somehow continue to do that when we make new games, so that people can come in and be like, oh, I thought I would hate an RTS. And then it turns out it's different enough from RTSs and the sort of the standards and expectations that people have with those kinds of games that maybe we can make that something that someone who's not an RTS fan would actually like.
And I'll also say a big reason for this is we tend to try to make games that are in genres that we typically don't get into. When we made Towel Fight, I mean, Sam was really into Binding of Isaac, but I didn't like it at all.
Me neither.
So we were like, well, let's try to sort of capitalize on what is fun about that game, because a lot of people do like it, right? So let's look at the elements of that game that make it fun and then, you know, put our own spin on it, try to make some things more accessible and all that. And then we did, you know, similar thing with like, you know, people keep saying, oh, Crashlands, it looks a lot like Don't Starve. And yet it looks a lot like it in the sense that it is from the top down and you are crafting things. But when you get into the actual meat of the game's mechanics, almost everything is different.
Yeah.
In a lot of really huge ways. And that's just because we all played Don't Starve and we just weren't that into it.
I think universally we hated it.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's not quite fair. I actually enjoyed the shit out of it for a good like 12 hours of gameplay. But it's one of those big things. I think it's also true. It's also a reason I didn't enjoy, or I guess don't enjoy, Binding of Isaac, is because any kind of game with permadeath where there is absolutely no game external
preserved,
where there's nothing preserved, I can only play for a while because at some point it just gets too frustrating to lose everything.
Right. Yeah. That's what put me off of Don't Starve as well. But on top of that, just the premise of the game being don't starve to death and also don't go crazy.
It's a little dark.
It's super depressing, and it also made this constant feeling of tension of feeling like everything you do, you are sort of losing. You know, like, oh, I want to go explore a little bit. Oh, I can't go explore because what if I don't find food in that direction? You know, I need to not starve to death. That's the whole point.
Yeah, well, what if you build something because then it's going to get struck by lightning and burnt to the ground?
And that's sort of the whole nature of the survival genre.
Yeah, actually, that's right. It's basically a completely no-win scenario because no matter what you do, everything's a cost-benefit analysis anyway, but everything has a high cost and small benefit, and then there's no actual winning of the game.
Nature always wins.
Yeah, in the end, you die eventually.
Yeah, so we removed all the survival aspects for Crashlands and just made it into an adventure RPG.
Yeah, that's something that people don't get to is they play Don't Starve. And I mean, I had this problem too when I first started playing it. I treated Don't Starve like a crafting game, but it's not. It's a survival game with a crafting mechanic.
Right.
And that's a really important distinction. I think the reason that probably a lot of people who don't like it is because they think of it as a crafting game first, and then of course you're going to hate it because a crafting game where you lose everything, you've all of your tech tree progress every few hours or less even, is not a great crafting game.
Yeah. And I have to say too, I really have no interest in making a game that has starving to death as one of its sort of core mechanics, because there's almost nothing less interesting that can happen to you, because in order for you to starve to death, just nothing has to happen for a really long time, right? I mean, that's what it means to starve to death. You didn't find food for a long time and then you died. Wow, that's real, real exciting. So that's about where we are, I think.
That being said, though, I think all of us are actually very interested in stepping back into the roguelike.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, but roguelike with metagame progression.
Roguelite.
Yes.
All right. So that's kind of our plans for the new year, for 2016. And of course, as with all plans, it will all be thrown away as soon as we start actually doing stuff. Yeah. So just bear in mind, this is what we want to do, not necessarily what is actually going to happen.
Yep.
Okay, now it's time for the segment of the podcast called Here's Some Games We're Playing. Let's talk about it. Sam, you've been playing Hand of Fate.
I beat it, finally.
What is Hand of Fate again?
Oh, so cool. So
wait.
What?
Not to be confused with the terrible movie
Hands of Fate.
Manos Hands of Fate.
Yeah, don't watch that. but this is a game that you actually should play if you like, if you do like roguelikes.
Where can we find it, Sam?
It's on Steam. I saw it on Steam a while ago, but didn't really get super interested in it because the sort of main picture, I guess the main sort of slug they use to show people who are potentially interested is of like a deck dealer, a card dealer. And I was like, I don't give a shit about card games. So I didn't look into it, but then over the winter, it was on sale for like $7. And so I actually watched the trailer for one, and then I read the reviews, and the reviews from people were all just sterling, where they're like, this is a incredible mashup of two different, or basically of three different genres. So it's a roguelike, but it's a deck building card game and also an action game. And so the way all of those blend together is there's this dealer, so you're sitting at a card table, essentially, in some sort of, in a weird-looking, like, Pantheon room. And there's this dealer across the table from you. And he's got this cool hood. He's a very creepy character. He's, like, always making fun of you for being terrible at the game. And he deals you cards. And so when you go and you enter a sort of a gameplay with him, he sorts a deck, which is essentially your deck plus his deck. And his deck builds out, you know, all sorts of... basically a dungeon. So the cards get laid down in a pattern, like a pathway, and then you have a little golden version of your character who's sort of stepping along. So you choose, you know, which direction to go, and one of the cards on any given deal is a pathway card that gets you to the next layer of the dungeon, so to speak, where there's a new, you know, assortment of cards.
Is this also a real card game, or does it have elements that you'll get to that are only video game possible?
What do you mean?
Like, because so the way you've described it so far, it sounds like it could be a real life card game.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it very easily could be. So basically what will happen is, so as you take a step, so you choose to go down a path in a particular direction, right? So you're trying to, the goal is to find the exit. And as you choose a step, your player moves and consumes a unit of food and then also flips over that card. And it's essentially every card is like an encounter of some sort. And in some encounters, it plays very much like an actual card game where, so you don't have dice, but it'll be something like, oh, there's a ravine and you see a shiny object at the bottom. Do you want to go inspect it? And if you say yes, then it shows you four cards. They're a random assortment of anything from huge failure to huge success. So these four cards, you might get like two of them that are regular failures and two of them that are regular successes. And then they turn over and then they shuffle in front of you and you have to pick. So you have to pick one of the four then that essentially determines what happens to you next. So it almost has like this text-based adventure feel to each one of these cards, right? And so you'll say that in this ravine situation, you see the shiny object, the cards flip over, and you get a huge failure card.
Oh, shit!
It's like, oh, you stumble down, and you trip and fall and get impaled on something or whatever. And then the dealer actually draws you what are called pain cards, right? So essentially in these certain circumstances, you get these really bad things that happen to you, like you'll lose 10 health permanently, or you'll lose 5 food, or something like that. So this goes on and on and on, and it's basically like you're just trying to stay alive against this card deck,
So it's basically totally random then, to this part you described so far?
Yes, except you get to build the deck, right? So while the dealer gets to choose a bunch of cards that also get inserted into the deck, you choose what encounters you might come across. And the really neat thing, and actually this is where the storytelling, like this game wraps a ton of stuff really intelligently together. So where the storytelling aspect comes in is that these cards that you'll find where you have this sort of random, you'll have a chance of having some particular thing happen. Sometimes you'll have a little sort of token on the bottom of them. And literally when you turn over that card, the dealer reaches over and opens a little jar and he pulls out a token that then like floats in space. And what that token represents is if you achieve some particular end with that encounter you're on, then you get that token, and that token will unlock essentially the next card in that series. And so quests in these large storylines are actually played out over the course of your, you know, like 12, 15 hours of play. Wow. by the succession of cards, and the cards replace one another, which you can, of course, only do in a video game. So, for example, there's one called the White Council, where you come across these a village, and they've just been, they're all sort of pissed off. They're like, what the hell? These guys took all of our money and everything. And so you go, you catch up to these bandits, beat the crap out of them, return the money, and then you find out that you've essentially doomed this town, because what they're doing was paying tribute to these wizards who are sort of like extorting everybody in the area.
Mafia wizards.
That's basically what it is. And what plays out then is this, it's a quest line over like, I think it's like 10 cards, right? Where, so again, you don't necessarily, you're not guaranteed to find these things when you're playing, because you're choosing what cards to land on as you try to get to the exit. And over 10 cards, you sort of like, you battle all these wizards and unlock wizards who are then roaming across the world, who actually end up encountering and fighting, which is what I'll get to now. So some cards you turn over and it's like, oh shit, you got ambushed by some monsters. And then the dealer draws cards, based on what monsters you fought so far. And there's like bandits, there's lizard people, there's undead.
Yeah, there's always lizard people.
There's rat people. And so he'll draw a couple cards.
Sam,
what?
Are there crab people?
There are not crab people. The lizard people are close enough as far as like being really damn weird, though. So so he'll draw a couple of these cards and flip them over, and then you actually go into real-time, extremely satisfying combat. And it's very simple. There's like three buttons. So you can hit people by clicking. You can kick people by right-clicking, which is kind of like a stun move. And then you can juke around with the space bar. And if you have a shield, you can also counterattack, and that's it. And they essentially use a telegraphing system, so it's very obvious what's about to happen. But the combat feels so good that it's ridiculous.
Although I've learned about telegraph systems, according to YouTube comments, is that if you have a telegraph system, then 6-year-olds can play your game, and it's therefore designed for 6-year-olds, and therefore you shouldn't buy it if you're an adult.
Yeah, because real adults just get hit in the face by shit that they had idea was coming.
Yeah.
Adam, I thought we told you to turn on your YouTube comments.
I'm actually not using that.
Oh yeah. So have we talked about this thing?
We should touch on it real quick. Okay. I think it's important to note. So we sent out all of our press contact stuff last Thursday, or I guess our first batch. We're still sending out a few, and that it's supposed to be embargoed until Tuesday of next week before anybody can say really anything or post any videos. And one of the bigger YouTubers has just sort of freely been posting videos, which, you know, whatever. At the end of the day, whatever. I mean, we gleefully
broke the embargo.
Yeah, we asked him not to, and then he didn't respond and kept posting videos.
Yeah, so it is what it is. But, of course, you're going to get YouTube comments on these things. And we have a policy where we just try, I mean, especially on our own stuff, we just don't read them because people are so mean on the internet. And there's a thing, a Google Chrome add-on called, what is it, Herp derp
for YouTube.
It just takes every word that someone types into a comment section on YouTube and just replaces it with herp or derp. And so, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I have a tendency to, when I watch a YouTube video, I actually scroll down and read start reading comments.
I actually don't anymore.
Well, yeah, so that's what I was trying to break that habit anyways. And now this thing literally just replaces it with herp derp. And it's just hysterical, especially if you forget about it for a while. and it reminds you about, you know, how silly the internet is as a place.
But what's amazing about it is that I don't know what it is with YouTube comments. I don't know. They seem just so much worse than comment sections on almost anywhere else on the internet.
Yeah, it is very weird.
But now that all of my YouTube comments I see are just herps and derps, I haven't really lost anything. Like when I scroll down to the comments, if I just read a bunch of people going herp and derp, I haven't like missed out on any information that I otherwise would have gotten.
Yeah, you know? Had you not done that.
Yeah.
Right, which is incredible.
It is. It's amazing how many people can take the time to say things while still saying absolutely nothing of value just at all. Yeah, so Hand of Fate, what's your verdict?
I think it's fantastic. The only problem with it is the final boss fight is so fucking crazy that it took me as long to beat the final boss as it did for me to get to the final boss.
That's good. I like that, though.
So it's about 6 or 7 hours to get there and then 6 or 7 hours to beat him. I kid you not.
That's a real boss.
Boring hours or interesting hours?
No, I mean, they're always interesting, right? Because I'm still unlocking new cards. I'm sort of moving these various storylines around and stuff as I'm failing horribly to fight this guy. And the reason it's so hard is that the end bosses of all of the rounds before that are like a jack of the rat people, for example, a queen of the rat people, and then a king of the rat people. So you're kind of working your way through the races. And then in the final battle, you have to fight all three of those of a particular race at once. And then you have to fight all four of those races. So yeah, it's basically 12 boss fights shoved together. Plus you have to like dodge crazy shit that the dealer himself is doing. So the dealer himself is part of the boss fight. And so, it's a to do.
This sounds awesome though. It reminds me of how you always point out that if you play Diablo, it's actually a very weirdly named game because you spend 12 hours getting to Diablo, not actually fighting Diablo or having anything to do with Diablo.
Yeah. Right.
And then you fight Diablo for 8 minutes.
I mean, then it's maybe. Done. It was like a 30-second match.
Yeah, I remember it being very short.
My monk was so overpowered that I just stood there and punched Diablo in the face.
Yeah,
I didn't dodge anything. You know,
it definitely, I think it's good that it took a long slog to do, but it seemed a little much.
to be fair, it would have been excessive if you had to fight Diablo for 12 hours.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Well, yeah, because in that game, you just wouldn't just click for 12 hours, I guess that's what you're doing anyway. So,
yeah. Well, the other thing is that so the each one of those boss characters has a particular sort of thing that they do to the rest of the people who are around them. And one of the final ones actually makes it so their teammates can't die while they're still alive. And I didn't want to Google it, but I couldn't remember which one of these three things it was. And so I spent like 10 minutes on this particular section just beating the hell out of all of them until finally the one that needed to die first died. So that could have been, better. I could have done that better.
Well, lesson learned.
Google stuff.
Should have Googled it.
But yeah, 10 out of 10 would recommend. It's
sweet.
Fantastic.
I will check it out. So after watching the Star Wars movie, I've been on a Star Wars kick. I've been playing Knights of the Old Republic on my Android device.
Also called KOTOR.
Yeah, I also have it on PC, but since there's no cross-platform saving, I had to pick which one to play it on. So I thought I would just play it on my mobile device so I can kind of see how they adapted it. It's a decent port. It was originally on the Xbox, like the Xbox, I think it came out in 2003, one of BioWare's first games. Still a phenomenal game. I beat it like 10 years ago and I still want to play it again. So if you haven't played Knights of the Old Republic, friggin' check it out. It's on Steam. It's on Xbox. It's on Android. I don't know if it's on iOS, but anyway, I've also been playing The Old Republic a little bit, which is not Knights of the Old Republic. It's just The Old Republic.
Just the regular Old Republic.
Yeah. It's technically the sequel to Knights of the Old Republic. So there's a whole bunch of story elements that carry over, but The Old Republic is an MMO, and it's also made by BioWare. And it's a weird MMO in that you can basically play it like a single player game and it doesn't matter. Like you never really need to interact with other people. So I'm not sure why it's an MMO, but there's eight different classes. And so in every other MMO I've played, everybody kind of goes through the same leveling experience, right? So like if you're a warrior or a rogue or a wizard or whatever, it doesn't matter. You all just do the same quests and whatever. Maybe every now and then you'll get like a special class quest. But that's not the case in the Old Republic. In the Old Republic, there are fully voiced entire leveling experiences for every individual class. So if you level up as a bounty hunter, you will have a completely different leveling experience than somebody who levels up as like a Sith Marauder or a Jedi Knight or a Republic Trooper or whatever. So that's pretty cool. I think there's a lot of replayability there, but it still feels weird to me that it's an MMO. I see other people running around, and so far my only real interaction with other people is that every now and then I'll be doing a side quest and they will also have the side quest and they'll just like run up and kill the monster before I can get there, and then I can't do it for a while. Like that's like so far the only interaction I've had with other people has been a bad thing.
Oh, that's kind of how I felt about World of Warcraft when I was playing it.
Yeah, it's the same. Yeah. This is also part of the problem of, and also in the Old Republic, they have the game's been out for 4 years. When it was first out, the level cap was 50. Now it's 65. And for some reason, they thought that in order for this to be like for people to still feel good about the level cap being raised, they sped up the leveling process.
Oh.
So I'm about 10 levels higher than all the stuff that I'm fighting. And so everything is trivially
balanced, basically.
Yeah. Everything has been trivially easy so far. And right now, the only thing that's keeping me going is just the sort of how interesting the story is. Because so far, I have not fought a single thing that has been even remotely challenging. Huh. So that's kind of a bummer. But it's also pretty typical of almost every MMO I've played these days, where everything is just insanely easy as you're leveling up.
Yeah. What does it deal with that?
I don't know. I think there's some kind of a, like, I don't know, maybe the developers view that as making it more accessible and also having like a good single player experience where you just absolutely don't need to have other people around in order to just one shot everything or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Seems like a pretty bad design decision, but everybody's making it. So
who are we to criticize?
Yeah. So those are the vid games I've been playing. And then, so as far as recommendations, definitely play Knights of the Old Republic. I don't know about the old Republic, whatever. 50-50. And otherwise, we have, we've been planning on putting together Dungeons and Dragons sessions. Mm-hmm. So I got the dungeon, this is tabletop, not any video game stuff. But what's cool about it is that almost every convention of modern video game RPGs and stuff is somehow derived from Dungeons and Dragons, which is really weird to see, like when you're reading through the Dungeon Master's Guide and all that, just seeing all of these terminologies and stuff that are from like 40 years ago or whenever it was that Dungeons and Dragons first appeared, still being used today in video game content.
In every video game.
Well, I was reading through that stuff, and I was like, man, it would be nice to have a calculator just doing this in the background for you constantly. Because goddamn.
Well, what's cool about Dungeons & Dragons, so for those of our listeners who haven't played it or don't know much about it.
I actually haven't played it.
So the basic premise is one person is the dungeon master, and their job is to basically act as the role of what would normally be like what the computer does in a video game. As the dungeon master, you lead the other players through an adventure. And so, for example, when the players talk to an NPC, the dungeon master speaks as the NPC. And you can even like make up voices and stuff or whatever. When the players are fighting a monster or something, the players will say what they want to do. So like maybe it's Sam's turn in combat and he's a gnome warlock. And he's like, I'm going to cast this spell. And so then as the dungeon master, I will tell him what he needs to do to make that happen. So I'll be like, okay, you roll a 20-sided die, and then based on your intelligence level or whatever, you can like add 2 to your dice roll or something. And then if you roll a high enough number, then your spell succeeds. So it's basically kind of like a meeting between the players playing as these different characters going through an adventure with the dungeon master guiding them through.
Yeah, I think the best way to think about it, it's literally just a storytelling engine.
It's a group storytelling exercise.
Yeah,
with rules. Yeah, it can be amazing. And if you are sort of interested in seeing what it's like, I would recommend checking out the Adventure Zone podcast, which is put on by the McElroy brothers, who are hilarious,
and their dad,
yeah. Who is also oftentimes unintentionally hilarious. he forgets the rules a lot, which is pretty hilarious. So we're gonna probably play some Dungeons and Dragons this weekend. So I'm gonna be the dungeon master, and then Sam and his fiance and my wife will be the adventurers.
And I would also adventure, but I have my own game night to go to, so I cannot participate.
Yeah,
in
it's
this
okay
first
though,
instance.
It'll be a rusty first thing because I've never been a dungeon master before, and I have to read through the whole several hundred page dungeon master's guide to sort of learn all the rules and stuff. So there's a learning curve to it.
Totally. Sure.
All right. So that's all we got for what we're playing, games that we're playing. Let's talk about it. Now on to questions. So these questions come from podcast.bscotch.net, and they are submitted by Bscotch ID members. Some of them are anonymous, a couple of them. But anyways, yeah, if you want to get your questions onto our future podcast, just head on over there to podcast.bscotch.net and ask away. All right, so our first question comes from Racing for the Finish with 12 upvotes. If you could relive, not redo, just relive, any moment in your life, what would it be?
Okay. I was thinking about this from the redoing perspective. Now I gotta, because this is like a positive thing.
If you could relive, yeah. I mean, it might not be
a positive thing. Yeah.
I don't know. But so if you were to relive a moment in a meaningful way, right? So it would mean that, just from a practical standpoint, I'm trying to understand how to think about this question. So you're gonna go, your mind is gonna go back in time.
You're basically trapped in your own body.
Right. And you're gonna,
as it goes, as an observer.
Because you can't change anything. So you're gonna be
there's no definition of how long a moment is. Like, I guess it could be like a day, could be
some event.
Yeah. So you'll be trapped in your own mind as an observer for some event in the past. And then in order for this to be meaningful in any way, presumably you then get snapped back into your present mind and are fully functional again. And you get to have now this fresh memory of having observed that. Does that sound right? Is that an accurate way to think about this? Okay.
It doesn't say that you can only relive this moment once. Maybe you can just always relive this moment.
Relive it. Be trapped in that moment forever.
Anytime you want, you can put your mind back in that moment.
So now here's the thing.
Where?
Basically, any really awesome thing from childhood. So take old video games as a really good example of this. I have in my memory, I have this vague sense of awe and awesomeness from the game Pathways into Darkness from Bungie from forever ago, like 91 or something like that. Recently, I got to play it again on an emulator.
And it
was garbage, right? But in my memory, the thing was just fabulous.
Well, I think
this is true of basically any old video game that I touch, right? And that's an easy reference because you can that's a thing that you get to try to re-experience again, and you can do it maybe 20 years apart because the technology allows you to do that. And in fact, movies are actually similar, right? Where you'll have a vague recollection of maybe an old cartoon or something. And you go back and rewatch it, and not always, but the vast majority of the time, you're like, "What the hell was this?" You know, or you get to relive it, but in a where there are multiple layers, and you get to now, as an adult, you know, as your current self, actually see the second layer because of how many things have happened in your life, which is just a long way to say I'm actually not sure it's a good thing to be able to go back and relive a moment.
Well, I guess what if there's the other stipulation that you relived it as that self?
Yeah, if you could relive the feeling.
Yeah, you're not. I would say that's the way to think about it, as opposed to just popping in and observing. You're not.
So it's really
you're literally flashing back. In living that for a brief moment.
You're basically refilling your nostalgia well.
Right.
Is that the idea?
Yeah, pretty much.
I don't know. Nostalgia's kind of sad, though, you know, because
it's happy sad.
It's happy sad. I mean, it's probably for me, it's the case that most things that used to make me nostalgic kind of don't really anymore. But I remember never, really loving the feeling of nostalgia. I'd always be like, oh, because it's always like, I kind of wish that's how things still were.
But not a lot. Can't be, and now you're sad.
And now you're kind of sad, right? So even though, I think what you're saying is better, I still don't think it's necessarily a good thing to be able to go refill that well.
Well, I think, I mean, for me, it's more that, so I don't remember much from being a kid, just because terrible memories and stuff. So I think my...
What happened?
No, not terrible memories, as in, I have a terrible memory.
Terrible memory.
Okay. Terrible memory.
I was like, shit.
So I think, I mean, my approach to this is actually the difficult one. I would like to relive stuff that I can't remember because that'd be useful.
Just to get a memory of it.
As far as to be able to swap through these different sections of life that I literally don't remember at all. I think that'd be fantastic. That's what I would like to have available, which makes it difficult, of course, to relive a particular moment because I don't know what that moment is. I would like to relive a moment that was important in some way, but that I cannot remember. That's what I would like.
Yeah, it must not have been that important.
This is super complicated.
I think it can be. I think it could totally be that important. If you know anything about how memory works, your memory is just like hilariously bad for keeping track of.
Oh, that is a fact.
Things. So it's, you know, it's totally viable that there might be something very important that happened to you that might have been like, it might have been a very chilled out event, like someone taking you to get ice cream and having a particular conversation or something that somehow accidentally informed a lot of the stuff that you do in your whole life, but you can't remember it because maybe it was at the time not a particularly big deal, like you said. So I would like to be able to, if you had a sort of, you know, a timeline of life events available, and there are ones that I can't remember, presumably, that are dark on,
you know,
that,
what?
And I would like to go back to some of those.
On that note, I have a very practical answer, given your answer, which is what I would like to be able to do is go back and revisit, because I don't trust my memory at all. I basically, as far as I'm concerned, every moment that has existed before the current moment I'm in is completely imaginary, because I don't trust my brain to remember that. So, but what happens with everybody is that somebody you know will be telling a story about a thing that you were involved in. And you'll hear the story, and maybe you'll hear it a bunch of times. You'll be pretty sure that it's been changing over time as that person tells it. But your own memory is being swayed by that telling of the story and the retelling of the story. And so you're just unsure actually like what the situation actually was. So if it was a general ability to go back to a moment and relive it, I would like to do that for a informational purpose. So that,
well, that's just like a perfect recall, right?
Yeah, I would use it as a perfect recall mechanism. So that could be like, I'm actually not sure what happened here. I have a recollection, you know, a vague recollection of what happened here, but I don't trust it. So I want to go back and revisit that moment so I could just observe it again and then come back basically with a fresh memory.
But here's the problem.
I feel like that would make you super annoying, though.
Well,
in
no.
Like conversation. It,
you know? Aren't I already?
It would only make you annoying if it was the case that like the people you're talking to who don't have this ability, right? They would always be telling a story, and they.
Yeah, I'm not saying I have to interrupt the story and be like, "You're wrong. That's not how it happened," right? Because there's already 1,000 cases where people are telling a story where I'm quite confident that's not how it happened, but it makes a good story, and so I just keep my mouth shut.
Yeah,
but then, I would like to then have confidence about how right I was, even if I don't declare it publicly.
Yeah, but you'd run into the problem where you'd just be constantly irritated at how nobody else can seem to remember what happened. And if you do jump in and be like, no, 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 actually, here's what happened.
You would be ostracized for your perfect recall.
Well, no, nobody would believe you.
Well, that's the problem, is nobody would believe you, and then you would just be like, well, fuck, like, what's the point of even remembering?
Well, then this brings into... This
not
brings
not
into,
even for your own personal satisfaction?
Well, this brings into view the question of what is important when it comes to memory, right? Because essentially... There's something that's getting constructed along the way. There's a story that's actually being built out of a memory along the way. And it's free to mold and change itself and whatever else. And actually kind of fit the purpose that it sort of maybe only vaguely did in the first place better as time goes on, as people mold it.
Memory is an entrenchment tool for your present.
That's what she said.
Well, it is. But it's more like, the narratives that you tell yourself and that you tell others or how you sort of construct your identity in a very large way. And so, you know, there's the question of what's important. Is it actually important to be accurate? Because I think the answer is not really. It's not
well,
really
I think
important
it depends
to be accurate.
On context.
It's important to be consistent, but not necessarily accurate.
Okay, so coming back to the question, though.
Okay.
I think there, it's a lot more complicated than it originally lets on.
It seemed pretty complicated just from the start.
Well, because at any given moment, so it's saying, you know, if you could relive any moment of your life, what would it be? But the person you were at the time, like let's say my moment was maybe like the first time I walked into swimming practice, right? Which I didn't realize it at the time, but it was a big deal because it sort of changed everything in my life from that point forward. But the person that I was then, I was very different. At that time, I had a completely different set of memories because I've forgotten probably everything that I knew at that time.
And right? You had a different worldview.
I had a different worldview. I had different friends. I experienced things differently because
you knew a lot less.
I knew nothing. I still know very little, but I knew almost nothing. And so everything that I heard, most of it I was hearing for the first time. You know, everything was new. And so. if you want to go back and relive a moment of your life, the only way for you to actually relive it would be to temporarily cease being the person that you currently are and sort of transplant yourself back into the mental state that you used to be in.
Yeah, but then somehow you have to bring that back for you, which you can't do because there's not like there's no way to translate your perception of that moment filtered by all of your life experience to a modern day, you know, experience of that.
And maybe it would just be the case that when you come back into the present, you'd be like, man, I was an idiot.
I think universally it's going to be the case.
I just didn't know anything. And everything was really interesting to me. And I said a lot of dumb things. Yeah. So personally, I probably wouldn't relive any moments. Just sunk cost. Just move forward. Forget it ever happened.
I think it'd be fun to be able to do, but I honestly can't think of a thing where I'm like, yeah, that's a thing that I would do. That I would go back to.
Well, yeah, that's just it. And it sounds like it might be a fun thing at first glance, but I think ultimately it would be useless for you and probably just make you sad.
Yeah. But think about what you're talking about, though, because like I don't think it's the case, because all you're talking about is remembering things right now, really.
So I'm talking about the context of actually reliving the moment. So like I was just saying about going back into that state of mind and really...
Right. I mean, you're talking about literally reliving the moment, but I'm saying that functionally, your memory it gives you the ability to do a similar thing. And even like reading a really good book allows you to live someone else's existence for a particular moment mindset.
Kind of. Because when you're remembering, you're also remembering it through the lens of your present self.
Yeah, for sure.
So...
But I'm saying, like, it's in a way, just it's like Adam was saying, it's basically enhanced or perfect recall of a scenario minus your current lens, right?
It's a very bad recall, also minus your perfect lens, or your current lens, sorry.
Well, I guess we'll have to answer this question with, oh, it's complicated. All right, next question comes from Mia Kitty with 9 upvotes. One for Adam's statistics machine. How many interns have been lost to the regions of space in Flop Rocket and or Roid Rage? Do you keep track of these statistics at all? And if not, what do you keep records of?
I'll answer that last question first. So in each of our games, we have a stats page for B-Sketch ID that you can compare. You can just do a little leaderboard with you and other players. So all of those stats we have for everyone who's in B-Sketch ID. At the moment, it's only for people who have buttered up in the game. But as we talked about earlier, we're changing the butter up system so that this will actually be present for everybody who logs into the game.
Yeah.
Which will then become about 3 times as many people, something like that. So right now, all the stats we have are for people who are buttered up, but we do have those stats plus anything else that's related to game progression so that we can sync your progress across devices and stuff. So anything you see in your stats and anything that would obviously be needed to port your game from one device to the next, like what pets you're using or anything like that.
Tell us about dead people, Adam.
I want to hear about death.
Coming to dead people. So I looked these up right before we started this podcast. And I rounded them a little bit because, you know, who cares about precise numbers? So Flop Rocket. It's just deaths. In Flop Rocket, 2 million players have died.
Wait, that's just of people who have logged in and buttered up.
Yes. And I feel like my Roid Rage number is wrong here. I need to go back and look at this. This seems like way too many.
I don't know. That does seem like a lot.
Doesn't it?
We have on the page here 323 million.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's maybe off by a factor of something.
By a factor of 1,000?
Yeah, by a factor of 1,000. It's 323,000. Roid Rage has the fewest number of buttered up players.
Right.
Okay. So 323,000 Roid Rage deaths, 2 million Flop Rocket deaths, and these are across actually just a handful of thousands of players.
Damn.
So on average, our active players are dying hundreds or thousands of times per play in these games. But to me, the fun one actually was that in Crashlands, which isn't available, the only people who've played it are our about 120 really active beta testers. There have already been 13,000 deaths.
Which is impressive.
Which is pretty good.
Well, the great thing about that is when you die in Crashlands,
in real life.
Yeah, and also
that's not what happened.
That's the ring or something. a gravestone falls from the sky, and you can go back and pick that gravestone up, and you can put it by your base as sort of like to make a little graveyard. So there are 13,000 gravestones floating around and
distributed across the
base. I think my favorite screenshot that someone sent us was they built a big base and then were spelling out the word help with their gravestones. Oh, yeah.
Another thing that we are wanting to do, so we kind of realize that it can be a bit cumbersome to have like 200 goddamn gravestones. So one thing we're going to look at doing in the big content patch is adding a craftable item where you can combine, say, like 50 gravestones and make a sort of memorial statue to yourself or something.
Yeah.
And then maybe even take it one step higher and take like 10 of those to make some kind of a crazy huge monument sort of a thing. That way you can consolidate your graveyard and make it a little bit less sprawling.
Yeah, maybe they'll even give you buffs because if you're dying that much, maybe you need a little extra.
Maybe you need some help. Of course, then min-maxers will just go kill themselves 1,000 times.
And, that's true.
You know.
But, you know, if that's how they want to play the game, then who am I to stop them from?
By all means.
If that's how you want to play it. That's how you got
to
play it.
It doesn't sound very fun to me to play it that way.
All right, next question comes from Flavin or Flavin.
Flavin Flav.
Flavin Flav. Plus Flavin. 8 upvotes. The podcast is called Coffee with Butterscotch, but you guys talk about coffee very little. So let's talk about it. Do you drink it? How much? Where do you buy it? If you brew it yourself, what is your preferred brew method?
Okay, wait. I want to interject the story here before we dive into this.
Is it a related story?
It is related. So when I was getting the cancer exhaustion before I knew that I had it, I would compete with the cancer by drinking a shitload of coffee every morning. And I'm talking like...
Spoiler alert, the cancer won that fight.
Yeah. So
coffee does not cure cancer.
So I would wake up and I'd be like, God damn, I'm tired. And I would make a pot of coffee and I'd drink the whole pot of coffee like in a go. So in like an hour.
Are you talking like a drip pot of like...
I'm talking a French press. So that's
like the 30-ounce French press, the big one?
Yeah, that's the one I used to have. So a 30-ounce French press.
Yeah, so you're talking like 3 cups of coffee, basically. 3 like good-sized cups of coffee.
Yeah, easy. Yeah. And then that would get me to like 11. And I'd be like, oh, God, I'm so tired. And I'd do another one of those. And that would get me to like 2 in the afternoon. And then I'd just have to nap because I was too tired. The coffee that I make now is basically the same potency because of that whole thing. Like I just pour a ton of beans in there or a ton of grounds in there. And so I make extremely powerful coffee. And
that's
I make
the only
it in
way.
I make it in a French press, and it'll put some hair on your chest if you drink it. And it's just Starbucks.
Like, it's like brand mud.
Yeah, is it a little like soupy because it's got a lot of particles in there?
It stuff? Will be. Yeah, it is once you get to the bottom. Seth occasionally gets to the bottom of the press, and then it's like...
Yeah, get the grit.
Yeah, but you know, to me, that's kind of like drinking that, you know, that the dregs of the French press. It's kind of like choosing to drink whiskey instead of beer, you know, where it's like, I know why I'm drinking this. So I'm just going to go for it.
I'm here to get the job done.
Yeah, just get the maximum potency per fluid ounce.
Yeah, so I do a French press, and there's these Asian things, which are this Asian appliance, which I had never seen. Diana's mom got us one, which is it's a hot water heater, but you just put water in it, like a liter, I think it's 2 liters of water ours holds, and it just keeps it boiling hot all the time. And so, you know, in the morning, get up and put too many grounds basically into the bottom of this French press, which is actually just a big metal carafe because my other one shattered. We set those all the time too. We just shatter glass French presses with alarming frequency, so mine's made of metal.
Yeah, I broke 4 French presses, and then finally our mom had an old shitty plastic one laying around from like 5 years ago. She's like, here, just take this. Because shattering a French press is the worst because like you push the plunger down and all of a sudden it just goes, and then just coffee, hot boiling coffee just pours over.
You break it while plunging it?
Yeah, that's how I broke it.
What are the physics behind what's happening?
I don't know.
I think it's the heat, the pressure.
Are you applying? Is it because you have so many grounds, and because you just instead of pushing it down and letting it up so the grounds can fall, you just force it as hard as you can?
Probably that.
So you're literally so you're adding, like, because you guys are both strong as fuck, so you're probably adding like 100 pounds of pressure.
Well, I think what's the point of using a French press if you're not going to also sort of
bench press
fuse it into your daily tricep routine?
French press is one of Seth's tricep routines. Yeah, I do. He does it after his bench press.
Every morning I do 83 pounds of French press. So 15
yeah, so reps. I think all of us drink a ton of coffee. And then as far as where I buy it from the grocery store pre-ground because I don't have a grinder and I don't care about. I don't care. Like Seth was saying, I don't care about the luxury of
you're not
coffee.
A snob. You're not a coffee snob.
I'm here to get jazzed, and that's it.
I'm here to get Sim's jazzed.
Here to get fucked up.
So I just buy the Starbucks brand from. It's always on sale at the Schnucks that I go to at the store.
Yeah, my approach to coffee is different than that. Because I am a coffee snob, although much less so than I used to be. Because I worked in a coffee shop when I was in college where we roasted our own coffee on site, and I've been drinking coffee since I was like 8 or something.
Adam is such a coffee snob that he burned his own arm with a with a coffee grinder thing and is permanently scarred and disfigured.
Although that was not intentional, it was because our roaster caught on fire. It dripped flaming epoxy into my arm while I was trying to deal with it.
Flaming but, epoxy, you know,
whatever.
Flaming epoxy, but that was a long time ago. But so I got used while I was working there. Anytime we would roast a batch, we would roast a batch every few days. Then I would, as part of the deal that I had with my employment, I could drink as much coffee as I wanted on site. And anytime we roasted coffee, I could throw in an extra like half pound and just take it home. And so if I could have an extra half pound every few days, that's more than enough coffee to support yourself anyway. And it was, you know, freshly roasted. So I could like roast some coffee and then drink it 5 minutes later.
Mm.
And so I got really used to that in that environment. And ever since then have been kind of sad about coffee because there's no other way unless you just roast it at home, which I don't have any way to do without smoking up our house and making my wife angry. There's just no way to do that and have it be that fresh. So for me, my current coffee approach is to seek out the freshest coffee I can find, which usually means finding some local roaster that stocks like a Whole Foods or some other horrible place, but that does tend to have, you know, local produce and stuff. So like our Whole Foods nearby has a few local roasters and those have actual dates stamped on it. So I try to find stuff that's only a few days old. And if I'm really lucky, it'll be like in that day that I can be super excited about it.
I will say when we visited you guys, that was some good coffee.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a different. There's when you're in the middle kind of coffee with it's like your pre-ground stuff, your Starbucks, and your like those various things that you just go buy and they don't even have dates on them. You know, all that stuff. That's basically all the same level of quality.
So it's not terrible.
It's just fine. No difference. They're just, you know, there's some minor taste differences and stuff. Some are more burnt than others, that kind of thing. But for the most part, it's just all the same. But when you go into like the really good fresh stuff that's roasted well. It's just a different thing. So I try to inhabit that space. And I'm happy to drink shitty coffee as well. Like, it doesn't bother me. But when I'm seeking out my own coffee stuff, I try to find the fresh stuff. I used to only do a French press, but now for the past, I don't know, like half year or something, I actually use a tea infuser. And I got this little metal tea infuser. It's the kind that just, it's not the one that closes. It's just sort of like a little mini cup with tiny holes in it that you just set inside of the actual mug. And so I just throw two scoops of freshly ground, freshly roasted coffee into it, like two heaping tablespoons, and then slowly pour, not boiling, but super hot water over the top and let it sit for a few minutes. And then I've got super powerful coffee that's really good.
That's a good idea.
It's also easy to clean up because fucking those French presses, although they're awesome, are really annoying.
Yeah, that's why I got rid of mine. I just use a Mr. Coffee.
Yeah.
So
I don't know, man. I got to get my gains every morning. So.
But I will say, yeah, Sam's got to get his tricep workout with his French press. I mean, so far for me, the only thing that's a really big sort of bummer about my daily coffee experience is that I don't have a fireman's pole that goes down to the kitchen from my bedroom. I mean, the bedroom is right above the kitchen. So it seems like, and actually, if you were to like plot it, a vertical line from the coffee machine, it's basically about even with my nightstand. Okay. So if I could just wake up in the morning, reach over to my right, grab the fireman's pole, and just pull myself out of bed and slide down to the coffee machine, I feel like that would be the best way for me to experience coffee.
I feel like you in the morning plus a huge hole in the ground is just, that's just going to be
recipe for disaster.
Either way, I'm going to wake up and I'm going to have an interesting morning. So
yeah, well, either adrenaline will wake you up as you plummet to your approximate death, or you'll get some caffeine. So I guess it's a win-win.
Can you absorb caffeine through wounds? I don't know. Probably.
You'll find out pretty shortly after doing it, I think.
You can absorb caffeine through pretty much anything.
If you try hard enough.
All right, let's hit one more question, and then we'll call it a day. So we'll be about, like, I don't know, 25 minutes of extra bonus content for you guys. That's DLC. We'll be charging you directly, so don't worry about that.
Well, don't even worry about it. You just keep listening, and we'll send you a bill in the mail.
Mm-hmm. No, we won't even do that. We'll just take the money straight out of your accounts. We have your cards on file, so no problem.
Yeah.
All right, so next question, or last question, comes from Gafferman. Gafferman says, Mia Kitty's got you covered on the weirdest, but what's the most unwittingly phallic creature you designed?
this is a great question to
I feel on. Like it's a little bit of a leading question because it says unwittingly phallic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. Well, actually, but it is true, though, that there is, it's not a creature, but the most presumably unwittingly phallic thing was phallic enough that it literally resulted. It's in Crashlands. It resulted in one of Seth's feedback items when we got the whole feedback system put up being literally, Sam, make this thing look less like a dildo.
I will say, though,
it still looks exactly the same way it did.
Yeah, I didn't change it.
Not because phallic. It's dildo-like.
Dildalic.
Dildalic.
Okay, the important point here, though, is that... So it's actually... It's supposed to be a kaleidoscope, right?
Which, yeah.
Of course, kaleidoscopes are very phallic in nature, oftentimes.
Well, I mean, in that they're a tube.
Right, but that's basically what phallic means, which is kind of unfair because lots of stuff is just a tube.
Well, no, but at the end of the day, certain aspects that you add to it can then make it more phallic. For example, this item looks like it has balls, kinda.
Okay,
no,
well,
no,
I think
it's not it does that it has not, balls. No,
it's got no balls. It's got it's ribbed.
It's for, ribbed. It's ribbed for her pleasure.
For your viewing pleasure, because it's a
It's made of a thing called a tuber. Which is a long, purple, bumpy shaft that protrudes from the ground. And you have those to pop it out of the ground.
They're supposed to be like berry things, you motherfuckers. So the other important context piece here, though, is that so this is one of the catalytic agents for the glidopus. And so the glidopus, in order to transform it into its more powerful counterpart, first you have to give it... this is part of the contextual problem, is that the first item is called a glidopus love balloon.
That's true.
Yeah, somehow the glidopi have ended up with just like sex toys as all of their.
It's literally items. It's like a water balloon that you like shittily have drawn a glidopus face on.
Wait a minute. The love balloon is the first item for evolving the glidopus.
Yeah, and
the second item is the dildo. Right. A kaleidoscope.
And this, I mean, these were made months apart.
A year apart.
Yeah. So I just was making stuff.
Because the love balloon was originally used as a taming item, where you had to throw the love balloon at a glidopus.
Yeah.
In order to trick it into being your
loving
pet.
You, I guess.
Yeah.
But you don't throw a dildo at it, though.
No, the dildo
we've changed the game mechanic.
Yeah, once it's nesting, then you show it to a dildo, and then it gets the idea.
You just hit it with a dildo in the face, and then it evolves.
And then it grows.
It's like a thunderstone.
And then it gets bigger when you hit it. When you hit
That's
it
pretty much how puberty works for people, though, too, right? So
you just get hit with a dildo, and then you get really big all of a sudden.
So, yeah, I think as far as the most unwittingly phallic thing, that one...
That's definitely
that
the one.
That one definitely takes...
Is there a... unwittingly phallic creature?
There was the emerald smash borer, which
that was another item, though.
It was a little like insect that came out of
so here's the problem is that lots of things look like dicks as it turns out.
The problem with this one was that it was sort of like a grasshopper, but it was just like a long slender body and then a penis head shaped head as its head.
It was not shaped like a penis.
It was, love God. It was pretty...
It was a bug. You guys, everybody needs to get their minds out of the damn gutter on this stuff.
It was pretty dicky. which is
pretty
a word.
Dicky. Yep.
Actually, okay, let's hit one more okay, question, sure. And then we'll call it a day.
Okay. Fine.
This last question comes from James.
James with a Z?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why I put that emphasis on it.
Okay.
James says, if you were on a deserted island somewhere, which one of you would be the first/last to perish and why? Also, what skills do you have that would help you to survive?
Is first/last, is that like one thing? So it's like a quantum.
It's a quantum perishing problem.
The first and last.
Which one of you would be the first and last to die?
I have a question first.
Well, actually, if only one of us died, then technically that person would be both the first and the last to die.
I want to make sure that you read this question.
That's true.
Exactly correctly, not how you expect it to be. Is it desert or dessert?
Deserted.
There's only one S.
So deserted. It's definitely deserted. There's just deserted. Nothing there.
If it was a desert island. I would be the first to die of a diabetic coma.
I don't know. It depends on which one of us is most resistant to diabetes. Because we would all be... that would be the best moment of our lives.
Our whole family has a real problem with sweets.
We don't get diabetes very much, though. We just eat a lot of sugar.
Not very much.
I get diabetes all the time.
Well, I mean, we don't have much history.
No, we got great pancreases.
Yeah.
Probably from all the sugar. There's some history, yeah. Not a really extensive history of it.
I think our grandfather got it in his early 70s. So he made it a long time. Considering he lived mostly on ice cream, I think he had it going on.
Mm-hmm.
Good pancreas action.
Yeah.
All right, so
who's going to die? I guess it's the question. Or I guess maybe let's talk skills first. Adam, what do you bring to the table?
Yeah, pitch your survival skills, Adam.
For my survival skills for a deserted island.
We're not putting you in this dinghy unless you bring something to the deserted island table.
The problem is we don't have any details on what's on this deserted island. Because if it was like a deserted island in the Arctic, for example, that's a very different scenario than like...
Let's go with traditional, okay?
Meaning
besides
it's...
Besides your ability to question everything.
So we've got a sandy beach, and we've got palm trees, presumably.
Palm trees, yeah. Presumably there's a spring.
Is it like the situation in Lost?
I think it's probably like Castaway.
Or Castaway. Okay.
So which those are actually the exact same story. Probably even took place on the same island.
Probably.
Airplane crashes on an island, and then everybody becomes a crazy bearded hermit.
Yeah. So Adam... So maybe there's coffee trees here.
Oh, that'd be nice. So I can get tired really rapidly.
Okay.
And
good.
I can get headaches if I don't have caffeine.
These are some great skills.
Yeah, man. I'm built for survival. What else could I do? That's about the limit of my skill set, I think.
You can grow a mustache that connects to your beard.
That's true. I can grow a super dangly mustache.
Mm.
With the super dangles.
All right, Seth, what do you bring to the table?
Well, I can crack coconuts with one finger. So I got that.
Do you flick it, or is it like a karate chop with an index finger situation?
I
just gently touch it with my finger, and it explodes.
So you have like an anti-coconut matter on the tip of your fingers.
Yeah, it's an implant. And then I always carry a knife.
So I would have a knife.
Wait, how did we get trapped on this island though? Because if we were got there by airplane, you wouldn't have this knife anymore.
Well, you see, we got here because my knife also creates wormholes to deserted islands.
Ah, okay.
Can we go back in the wormhole then?
No, it only creates wormholes to deserted islands, not from deserted islands.
But can we go to another deserted island from the current one?
Yeah, I mean, if we wanted to.
So we could, like, explore all existing deserted islands to find any resources we needed.
Yeah, but the one thing we couldn't find is people.
Since that is so bad.
The one thing we couldn't find is people, because the criteria of an island being deserted is that there's no one on it.
Could you, if we got too hot, could you open a wormhole to, like, an Arctic deserted island?
AC? Well, I mean, it's random, so we might need to make a few warp jumps before we got to the one we needed.
That sounds good.
So that's my skills.
That is a useful skill set.
Coconut explosions and wormhole jumping. So I think that would probably make... I don't think any of us would die, really.
Not in this scenario.
Yeah. I mean, with Adam's dangly mustache skills, mm-hmm. and my coconut exploding.
What else could you need, Sam?
Well, you know, in my case, I need drugs to live. So I have that going for me.
That's true.
I mean, that's what they say.
Yeah, I guess we could test.
But you
test
didn't.
Theory.
You didn't take them for like a week.
I still haven't been.
I guess. So, I guess the question is,
wait, you're still not taking them?
Well, they haven't come in the mail yet.
For those of you not from the U.S., this is how.
Congratulations.
This works.
Yeah, congratulations.
You get a stem cell transplant. The doctor says, "Here are the drugs that you absolutely must take in order for your new immune system to not." Literally murder your internal organs. And then you go to your insurance company and you say, "Hello, insurance company, I need these drugs." And they go, "Yeah, I don't know about that.
I don't know. We're going to need an extra couple of days to think about it."
And then they think about it. And then you call them back. You're like, "Hey, guys, have you thought about it?" And they're like, "Well, yeah, but we're going to have to run this through some facilities." And then it gets shipped around for about a month from place to place. And the great thing is, then once you finally get it, if you ever get it, then when it runs out,
you do it all again.
Only when it runs out can you call them and say, "Hey, I need more." You can't call them like 2 weeks beforehand and go, "Hey, my pills are about to run out. I need a new order." They'll be like, "Well, you still have some, so we can't begin the process of getting you your next round of pills because you still got some." So,
yep.
All of these things have literally happened to me in the past couple of months.
Yeah, which to me, this is the most fucked up thing about this is that when Obama was campaigning for his healthcare shit and he was like, "Healthcare for everyone," and everybody was freaking out.
Well, no, it was insurance for everyone.
Well, yeah, well, that's the thing. It started as healthcare for everyone.
Yeah.
And over time, the solution we all landed on was, let's just get everybody enrolled into the worst fucking system you could possibly conceive of instead of just giving people what they need.
But if everyone's there, it'll reduce prices somehow.
I'm a strong proponent of literally destroying the entire insurance layer of healthcare.
Yeah.
So
it makes no sense it makes no sense that it is a for-profit institution. Everybody needs to be alive.
It makes no sense that when I talk to someone on the phone and I say, "Hey, I need these pills that I need to not die." And they say, "Well, when did you last get some?" And I say, "5 days ago. Can you help me out? Because there's some across the counter from me and I just need you to perform an override so that that pharmacist across the counter can hand me the pills." And then they say, "I don't know. I'm going to need to put you on hold for a little bit. I need to talk to one of my pharmacists about this." And I say, "I don't think you fucking understand what I'm talking about here. But if I could reach through this phone and strangle you to death, I would."
Well, and Sam, when you turned 26, you had to switch insurance plans.
Yeah.
And they refused to tell you what they covered.
Nobody would own it. And this was actually completely shocking to me because I was like, "Hey guys, I just need to make sure that you do transplant coverage, 100%. And very simple question, yes or no answer. And they're like, "I'll send you the documents about this particular plan." I'm like, "Can you just tell me? Because you should know." And they're like, I can't say anything about what we do. I'm like, okay.
All so they could do is give you the legal document that says what they do, and you have to infer it, and then they can try to sue you later.
Right.
So you have to infer it accurately. It's in some combination of legalese and medical jargon.
Right. Like, so I read through it, and then I send it to both my parents, who are medical people, and they're like, "We're pretty sure this is good. We're pretty sure, but we're not 100% sure because, who the fuck knows? So you should ask them when you call them back." So I call them back and say, "Hey, I'm pretty sure this is good, but I just need to know, do you cover this stuff?" And they're like, "We cover what it says in the doc that we cover."
Yeah, and nobody will say it because I can bet you that the people who use the phone to talk to customers are not allowed to speak about what the plans cover because they might misspeak.
Yeah.
Right. So they just not allowed to talk about it, which is pretty. It's pretty weird.
It's pretty dumb because I'm paying you to make sure I don't die. So if I don't know if that's not going to be covered.
Well, no, it's not die and not go bankrupt.
Yeah.
Right.
You have two goals that the insurance company is supposed to be solving simultaneously. And they're actually not going to guarantee either.
Right.
They're just like, well, we're not going to let you have your pills, and we're not going to tell you if we're going to pay for anything. So, right. so we're both going to let you die and let you go bankrupt in the process.
Well, this is really why it's incredibly insane to have for-profit institutions managing risk management for healthcare costs, because their only goal is to spend as little money as possible, right? So that they pocket as much as possible.
It doesn't really align with the goals of everybody else.
Yeah. And the only reason that you buy insurance is so, you know, you pay in regular amounts of money that are knowable, so that when something unknown happens, that risk gets spread out, right? So you can handle it, right? But if their whole thing is, we'll take all of your even payments of money, but when you need us to give some of that back, we just won't
do it.
It's like, what?
What's the point?
Yeah, so I'm a little disillusioned about this whole insurance layer. But the funniest thing, I think, was so after this conversation with this woman on the phone, and then I was like, well, can I just buy the pills here? She's like, well, you can, but we're not going to cover it. And I was like, how much would that be? And she's like, $232 for 7 pills. So good luck. She literally said, like, so good luck with that. I'm like, what? What in the fuck? Like, I eat 12 of these a day. At what point do you think it's appropriate to giggle in my face?
good luck covering those yourself. You got to wait 6 months instead.
Good God.
Hmm.
Anyway, so yeah, that's one of the skills I bring.
Pretty good.
The ability to get infuriated about insurance and... I think also I can make a mean sandcastle. So
we could mean enough that we could live in it, or?
Yeah, I think why not?
That's pretty mean.
That's a real nasty sandcastle.
Yeah, man.
Bro.
Man.
All right. Well, that's all we got for today. That was an extended edition of Coffee with Butterscotch. So yeah, we will
DLC, this is the gold bundle copy. That includes the Summer Pass DLC.
Yeah, Summer Pass DLC Platinum Edition. Yeah.
Gold copy.
Edition version.
Game of the year. Podcast of the year.
Podcast of the year. Which, I mean, there's not a lot of competition yet because it's only a couple weeks into the year. But we think we're going to hold the spot pretty firmly. All right, so this has been Coffee with Butterscotch. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I think we're going to try to be a little bit more reliable with our future podcasts. We kind of got thrown off the rails with all of the family and vacation stuff over the holidays.
And Crashlands, which comes out next Thursday.
Yes. And we will be attempting to do a podcast next Wednesday, which will be essentially the day or within 24 hours of launch. So
we'll probably just be weeping openly on air.
our pre-launch plans include getting drunk. So... it's going to be a doozy of a podcast. This year we're going to be trying to make an effort to really grow this podcast, grow the audience and stuff. So if you are a regular listener of the podcast, then we would really appreciate it if you could go to iTunes or wherever it is that you
Stitcher.
Listen to stuff. Give us a review.
SoundCloud.
Give us a rating. Give us 5 stars. Give us 10 stars. Give Twitter. Us 30 stars. I don't know. Just give us a whole bunch of stars.
Give us all your stars.
Write some good stuff. It'll be really helpful for us. And also, share it with your friends. If you're into games, if you're a game developer, if you just like joking around and hearing about random kind of game related stuff, just spread it around to your friends, and we'd really appreciate it. And with that, and also, of course. Head on over to podcast.bsketch.net if you want to ask questions and vote for questions for next week's podcast. And also stop into forums.bsketch.net and say hello to us and our amazing butterscotch community. All right, so that's all we have for this week, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.